Final Play Podcast welcomes you to the following presentation of the NFL. California definitely knows how to party after the Super Bowl.
Oh my God! Hello everyone, welcome to our. Well, I guess we can call it penultimate because we probably might do one more NFL podcast. I don't know if California knows how to do a Super Bowl, but Dr. Dre definitely knows how to do a halftime show. My God, that was.
Oh my Lord! What is it? A cool. $9.8 million. That's what that buys you. That's a pretty sound investment.
So it's been, you know, for all intensive purposes, it's been described as the best halftime show they've ever had. I half disagree because I still think Prince's one was absolutely ridiculously amazing.
Prince's one was amazing. I think the one 2 years ago, was it at Miami with the sexual gyrating of Jennifer Lopez and various other people. I think that's up there. This is definitely. I didn't want that to end. I did not want
no one did
halftime to end. But I think it comes in as a close second for our greatest halftime Super Bowl shows. I think the one that really stands out for me was 1999 and an empty arena match between The Rock and Mankind for the WWF Championship. I think that for me, that's the best all-time halftime Super Bowl show going around with Vince McMahon doing commentary with absolutely nobody and The Rock and Mankind beating the crap out of each other in an empty arena.
You're saying they foreshadowed what COVID would be like possibly.
Yeah, that's right. 22 years ago.
So performers were, for anyone that I guess missed it, was obviously Dr. Dre, who came up with his own studio out from the ground somehow. Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, and I guess a special guest in 50 Cent.
Yeah, no, that was look. If I had watched this live, I think that would have been. I think that was a genuine surprise for everybody because. They seem to keep that little tidbit.
They said a surprise, but my understanding or my feeling was it was going to be Ice Cube. I kind of thought, yeah, I don't know.
Look, I think that would have been a very logical choice. Like Cube's still doing stuff. Like it was the last week or the week before he did like a half race or a half time. Gig at the LA Coliseum for the NASCAR event that was there, which was the most ridiculous NASCAR event I've ever seen. Like, you know, that would be having race car or supercars here in this country drive around, you know, ANZ Stadium at, in Sydney. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. So, yeah, there was like a 60 meter straight. And then all of a sudden you've got to come into a hard corner. As a NASCAR event, it was just curiosity got the best of me. I had to have a little bit of a look at it, and I generally don't watch NASCAR, but to watch this was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And then having Ice Cube at the sort of half race thing do a gig was kind of cool. So, you know, he's definitely still out there making his money, but I thought that would have been a really cool surprise to have Cube come in.
Oh, it would have been awesome. So it was about 20, 25 minutes. Everyone smashed their hits out. Everybody smashed their hits out. Snoop was loving it. He was crip walking. He was smoking just before he got on, apparently, as well. Like, he was over the top of his life. But, you know, it was.
Oh, look, he was as cool as ever.
It was, they were sort of rated, like, obviously, obviously always the obligatory things come out of. Best Super Bowl halftime shows. So we mentioned Prince. Do you remember that 1993 Michael Jackson one where he just stood still for like 2 minutes before he did anything? And then he just smashed all the songs out. It was awesome. It was so good. So it was that. You mentioned the J-Lo and Shakira one. Everyone just like went ridiculous for that one. Well, good reason.
I think that would have been more popular with, say, 13 to 18 year olds.
Well, that's what I said. Imagine the headline for this one is: imagine complaining about this show because a couple of attractive women dare to shake their hips. What a bunch of dorks! That's literally the headline.
So, exactly.
The worst ones, just before we move on, the worst halftime shows. New Kids on the Block were 1991.
Oh my god.
It was like a Disney like field production, just out of control. Listen to this lineup in 2000. Yeah, you wait till you hear this lineup. Phil Collins, Christina Aguilera, Enrique Iglesias, and Tony.
Oh my lord.
And Tony Braxton in 2000.
Wow, that's a bit of a mix, isn't it?
That's a weird, weird mix.
That's a very strange mix.
And by looks of it, the worst was a Maroon 5 in 2019 that had.
I was going to say that was a couple of years ago.
Had cameos from Big Boy and Travis Scott, and then somehow SpongeBob SquarePants ended up on the stage. So, yeah.
Speechless.
That didn't deter from the actual game, which was the LA Rams, well, beating the Cincinnati Bengals. I shouldn't sigh like that, 23-20, but I don't know. Like, quick consensus, what you thought of the game?
Look, the game as a whole was still quite entertaining. Look, as you get. Yeah, look, it wasn't a snooze fest. It never really got
out of hand. I just think, and obviously because we were spoiled by how great the playoffs were. The playoffs were so good that I think this game was just anticlimactic in a way. It was still a good game, don't get me wrong, but because
it was only, I think these playoffs, I think there was only like two games or three games that were decided by any more than like 3 or 4 points.
And both the AFC and NFC title games were just phenomenal. And the AFC one was just insane, but both of them were just, well, each game, like I said,
these playoffs, I guess aside from really super wildcard weekend, which was a little sort of, you know, a couple of blowouts in that first round. But after that, the divisional round, you know, the conference championships that were very, very spoiled with drama, with excitement, entertainment, which were, you know, that's what you associate with, you know, the precedence of win or go home, you know, like the NCAA tournament for basketball. Yeah. So, you know, any dog can have its day, especially when it's a one and done type situation. You know, the Cincinnati Bengals rode their luck through the end of the season and throughout these playoffs to get themselves to an unlikely Super Bowl appearance. But all the win now tactics that the LA Rams have done over the past 18 months or so, with, you know, with getting the Jalen Ramsey, you know, getting Matthew Stafford, getting
Von Miller,
yeah,
OBJ.
OBJ. They're all very win now tactics, and it doesn't always happen, but it paid off for them.
It did. So the first quarter, well, I think it was a feeling out process. So both teams first.
They were very, very shaky, I think, in the first quarter was a feeling out process, I think.
Yeah, both first drives were just like basically four and outs and just sort of punts because it was more of a feeling out, shaky sort of process. I guess up until then, the LA Rams second drive was a bit more sort of potent in terms of getting the ball sort of down the field. This whole game, there was no, for both sides, but Mixon was okay. But the run game, for at least for the Rams, was just non-existent. And that was
completely non-existent
early.
For the whole game, not so much there. No. Just throughout this whole game, they just could not establish anything in the run game at all. They were trying. Mm. They were absolutely trying their damnedest to try and establish a little bit of dominance. But Cincinnati up front, were really, you know, defensively were really quite good in squashing the run game.
Yeah, they were.
Hindsight's 2020, but I thought the very early on decision by the Bengals to go for it on was a fourth and probably a long one on their very first possession inside their own half was a very poor decision. They didn't make it, and that's what I mean. Hindsight's 2020. To go for it on fourth and one and basically just have the play that was called was just a nothing run play. Like it didn't look like it was going to do anything. You know, the Rams have got a really good defensive front. I don't know why you would make that call to start with. And it cost them 7 points because that gave the Rams a short field for OBJ to get the opening touchdown of the game.
Well, they tried it. You're right. That first set, they got it. Joe Burrow did a short pass to Tyler Boyd for 8 yards. And then they were second and two. Mixon only got 1 yard. Perryon then only got 1 yard to make it third and one. So they weren't going anywhere from those two runs. And then they decided to try to throw the ball to Chase on a fourth and one. It just didn't make sense. You're exactly right. And then
it was just that's what I mean. In hindsight, it's a very poor call. But when it's done that early in the game, I can sort of see. I guess you can see the planning behind it, but you know you can't. It's just a very strange decision to be able to do that and to give, you know, a fairly potent LA Rams offense a short field, and they 100% took advantage of it.
Yeah, they did, and then OBJ got his he got the first touchdown, and he, you know, not just postseason, but ever since he's moved there, he is looking like the OBJ of old, so to speak, the New York Giants OBJ, I should say.
Yeah, look, he's looking a lot better than what he has, previously in a Browns uniform. He essentially paid,
which I love so much.
Well, that's right. He essentially played, you know, the back end of this season realistically for free because, you know, of the way that his pay was structured and being paid in Bitcoin and blah blah blah, but. Boy, did he get paid these playoffs. He got win bonuses for divisional championship and winning the Super Bowl. Pretty sure he accumulated $3 million in bonuses. It was
incentivated for each game up until the big one, which was like $1.5 million. I think it was like $700,000 that accumulated, kept accumulating to that. It was the full amount was $3 million, but he bettered himself and he did well. Unfortunately, I think him going down, you know, just around that sort of second half sort of area.
In that second quarter, non-contact.
Yeah.
The throw was a little behind him, but yeah, you know, that is what it is. And just a little bit of a left knee sort of got stuck in the turf a little bit as he tried to move and down he went, and it didn't. He looked extremely distraught.
Yeah, of course he did, because he wanted to play that sort of full game.
Yeah, being injured in the Super Bowl, that'd be brutal.
And I honestly think once he was gone, and then obviously Cooper Kupp was going to be just mauled from defenders, it changed the complexity of the game. It really did change the complexity of the game. It sort of sneaked
and that was the thing too. Like they're down receivers already. You know, they haven't had Robert Woods for most of the season. Now OBJ goes down. They don't have Tyler Higbee. Like their receiving core was just decimated. So
they tried to use that Ben Schoenick, who was absolutely terrible.
Skoronek,
who was absolutely terrible. Kendall Blanton was fairly. It wasn't Kendall. It was actually Bryce Hopkins. He was fairly good in the game.
Hopkins was nice. They didn't use Blanton like they'd used a couple of weeks ago, who I thought was a really good fill-in for Tyler Higbee in the championship game against San Francisco. They didn't use him at all. I think he was just used primarily as a blocker.
Yeah.
Which I thought, look, we're analyzing the game. Like, you know, if the Rams don't win, then we are hammering them, in the coming days after that for – still trying to establish a run game and getting nothing out of it. Not using you know, personnel that they've used beforehand in the receiving game in this. There's a lot of questions to be answered, but you don't have to because they ended up winning.
Well, that's right. Did you think, and this is from both coaches, did you think this game was poorly coached?
I thought play calling on both sides were left a little to be desired.
Yeah, I did on both sides. You know, Zach Taylor's, well, they're both still young. I mean, they're both under 40, which is absolutely ridiculous and great. They both got there. But, I thought the actual coaches weren't good in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's nothing else to go about it. They just weren't that good in the Super Bowl.
No, play calling.
They were scared or they were just so worried each time what was happening. Look, in terms of, and I thought he was like supposed to be this boy genius. In terms of McVay, he didn't seem to adjust when OBJ left the field injured. He really didn't. I mean, he tried things, little bits, but he should have just went to that well, and that well is Cooper Kupp. He should have just went to that well.
No, and that's right. Like he had 8 catches off 10 targets, but they were extremely limited, you know, after the OBJ injury, just you know, offensively. But look, they still got the job done. Like that's the thing about it. Like the way that the game sort of went, that they look as the second half sort of come to a close and the Bengals.
The first half, because the second half. Saying, the start of the second half was amazing.
I think it's second quarter. As the first half sort of comes to a close, like that they after the OBJ injury, they sort of the Rams sort of go a little bit stagnant offensively. The Bengals sort of get a little creative with how they were running things. You know, Jamar Chase started to actually get into the game a little bit, with the funky little play that they have with Joe Mixon actually throwing the first touchdown. Mm-hmm. For Cincinnati,
the old Philly special
was crazy. Like it was just a little rollout and as he's out to the right, and then I'm not sure whether or not it was a spur of the moment thing. It looked like he was ready to run, and then all of a sudden he sees T. Higgins all alone in the back of the end zone. So you've got to throw it.
Yeah, and that was a nice little Philly special.
It's right. It was beautiful.
For
a running back to be able to throw a pinpoint accurate pass like that on the run was magic.
And then a couple of punts have sort of ended, and then that second quarter ended. We mentioned the halftime show, but
what I was more perplexed about, especially in that first half, is why in the blue hell was it taking so freaking long in between possession changes? Did you notice that? You watched it live, right?
No, I did watch it live, I guess because I was wrapped up in the atmosphere. I felt
like I was fast-forwarding multiple possession changes for at least 3 minutes. I don't understand why. I understand why, because they want to pump in those commercials.
Well, that's why, I think, States. If I remember
but
correctly.
That's crazy. Everyone just stands around in the field stagnant, standing around.
I think
doing
if
nothing.
I remember it correctly, I think that's how it was last year as well. But that's unfortunately, and this is where the Rams come into play. Well, it nearly didn't matter, but this is where the Super Bowl experience comes into play, because they know that the game literally, even though it's supposed to be an hour or so, it turns into 5 hours because of that.
Yeah,
but
sure,
you're right.
It's so drawn out. It was ridiculous. Everything felt like it was so overproduced, you know, the introductions of both teams by The Rock, like just the whole rigmarole that went on with the coin toss and the kick, and it's just like, oh, for God's sakes, I've never been to a game, so I don't know what all the hoopla would be at the start of the game, but it just seems so overproduced. It's just like, what are we doing here? Like, is this? I don't know what this is. Like, this is very bizarre.
Yeah. Before we get into the second half, we didn't mention The Rock's sort of. It was basically like a WWE cut promo. Like his literally, it felt like the way he started to get into it, like it was a cut promo that probably Vince wrote for him, because he did the eyebrow at the start, literally at the start, and then he started to get into, like, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and oh my god, it was good, but then it was sort
that
of
was
half.
That was the most LA Hollywood thing that they could do.
That's why I thought it was good, but then I thought, oh, like, is this a bit too cheesy? I don't know.
Oh, it's super cheesy. Come on, man. That's super cheesy.
Oh, but I like The Rock. That's the problem. But then I thought...
No, of course. I mean, everybody loves The Rock. But yeah, that was super cheesy. Like the way that they were introduced that way, and the way that there was no pause in between him saying the millions. Anyway.
yeah, you know, you're right there.
That was extremely disappointing.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think
70,000 strong would have been awesome, saying and millions.
And a couple of the commentators, yeah, but that's just the problem with LA fans. That's a whole different ball game.
In this, oh, you know, for God's sakes.
It was still probably 60-40. 60-40 to Bengals, mind you.
Don't even start on me with fickle LA fans.
that whole melodrama at the start, it was weird, and then Billie Jean King come out of nowhere, and she was a coin toss person.
Yeah, like,
I don't know why Billie Jean King was a person that decided to be the toss coin.
Didn't they say she's an LA native?
Where is she? I didn't think she was. I mean, she's a tennis icon, so it probably doesn't make a difference. It has nothing to do with this game. But, yeah, look, the first half was okay, was fairly good, and that's the start of the second half, or that second, yeah, literally the start
the
of that second half.
The third quarter just started.
Now, I already know my answer, but the T. Higgins touchdown. Well, no, we'll go back first. It was a dumb, and it was always going to be in play. And I think he was Matt Stafford was down as over under of two interceptions, and he threw over two interceptions in this game. He threw this massive gun. He tried to throw a massive gun, and then he did that. It was a short pass to Shawnek, and then Chidi Bayi-Awuzie took the interception, didn't he?
Awuzie got the interception, but that was after the T. Higgins bomb. Like there was essentially two plays.
No, that was after the bomb.
To start off the third quarter, the 75-yard bomb from Burrow to get the touchdown for T. Higgins, and then the interception on the very first play that the Rams had on their next possession, which Cincinnati didn't capitalize on. But there's a lot of conjecture around the T. Higgins touchdown, and was there an offensive pass interference for a face mask?
Yes, there was. I mean, there was,
but boy, Jalen Ramsey went down pretty easy.
He went down
pretty
easy.
That's all I'll say.
You're right. No, I agree with you. You're right.
Jalen Ramsey went down pretty easy.
Of course he did, but it was a clear offensive interference. It was a clear offensive interference.
Just what they were saying on ESPN, because I recorded the ESPN telecast of it, which was a bit of an amateur move on my part. I should have taped the seven mates, so I would have actually been able to hear Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. But anyway, that's
the for the last time. Today. For the last time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. Al Michaels is getting paid.
Yeah, that's a bit of an amateur move for you.
We didn't mention, before,
I don't know if you thought this was a turning point, but when they got their second touchdown, LA, I actually grabbed a beer and sort of flicked away. It was supposed to be a kick, but then it was a 2-point conversion attempt by Hecker. And did you think that was an actual turning point?
He simply just dropped the snap.
Yeah, he did, and then he tried to throw the ball, and he obviously it failed, and then it got intercepted, and they were lucky that obviously they had enough people on there to sort of tackle whoever intercepted the ball.
I can't remember who the interception was on that.
It was Pratt. It was Pratt that intercepted it. Pratt that intercepted it. But it was. I mean, I missed it, but was it just that much of a kerfuffle that they just dropped it? I thought it was a big turning point.
It looked pretty ordinary. I think it was just a simple botched, snap. I think the snap was a little bit too close to where the holder was. It wasn't clean. And as he fumbled it a little bit, he got up and just went, better try and do something. So yeah, he sort of hoiked the ball into the end zone, and then it looked in very much disarray.
Yeah, it was a weird. I kind of thought, that's going to be their turning point of
apparently,
the match.
Apparently, cost one punter, in the US, $1 million because he put money on LA to have over 13.5 points at halftime, and they only had 13. $1 million.
Stop betting. No, I got a good bet of this. I got $260 off a $5 bet from this game. The first half bomb was a clear offensive interference, but the touchdown still counted. Can't call that back. That's just the way it is.
I mean, I don't think that's not so much a reviewable play. I don't think you can sort of go back and review that because we all know you're not allowed to review pass interference calls anyway. So we all know who we can blame for that. But it just, I just thought that Jalen Ramsey went down too easy.
It was both. He flopped a little bit, and it was also a clear face mask for the offensive interference. So it was both. Yeah, it was. Both players were clearly. Jalen Ramsey had a terrible game, to be completely honest. I don't know if he was trying to get for the flashy in a interception, and then Jamar Chase was just burning him a lot of the times. That nice, beautiful one-handed 70-yard bomb catch, or I think it was 60 yards. He was burned by Chase so many times. It was ridiculous.
Yep.
It's funny, after that, but. Like I mentioned the interception, and then there was a couple of field calls, but that whole third to fourth quarter,
it was very dire, wasn't it?
Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 punts.
Towards the end of the third quarter and the start of the fourth. The Bengals went basically they went three and outs, and then they got like two first downs on another drive, and then it stalled. And the Rams were the same. They went three straight, three and outs. I thought as the third quarter sort of come to a close and the fourth quarter started, I really thought that the front four for the LA Rams really started to get cooking and really started to bother Joe Burrow a lot. And he was getting caught and under pressure a lot more than what he was in the first half. Like, he ended up being sacked 7 times. I guess his luck just sort of ran out, I guess. But the more that this game went on, the more he was under duress, and the more that this LA Rams defense really started to take over the game.
I thought the same thing. And they did. They kept getting the ball back. Well, both of them. We mentioned, they were both a bit stagnant. But once... I guess Sean McVay was trying to draw up sort of certain plays, and they were sort of getting down to that 3-minute sort of mark. Up steps Cooper Kupp. I mean, he was the only one that in 15 plays and 79 yards, I think he was involved in nearly every single play because he had
that clutch drive by Stafford and the Rams that basically ended the game. For the game when he touched down to Cooper Kupp, I think he was involved. I think Kupp was involved five times in that.
Yeah.
The unbelievable way that Matt Stafford manipulated defenders with his eyes and essentially throws a no-look pass across his body into what looked like double coverage to Cooper Kupp, and it was just threaded. He just threaded the needle perfectly. And it got there was one of the most crazy. That's like a Patrick Mahomes pass.
Yeah. It was weird. Stafford had a pretty mediocre game up until sort of that final drive. But I think he was, to me, helped by Cooper Kupp. Like, Cooper Kupp was just... Who started slow.
Oh, absolutely.
Who started slow.
No, that's right. And look, Matt Stafford has had, I think he was tied for second this year for throwing interceptions in the regular season. But he didn't, you know, he had two interceptions in this game. I think the timing of the interceptions that he threw, one was in the first quarter. And then obviously that one that was the first play of the third quarter weren't capitalized and weren't pounced on, so to speak, by the Cincinnati Bengals. And I think that sort of saved his bacon, really, as the game sort of drawn to a close. You know, after they got the game, yeah, you know, the game winning touchdown, there was still a minute 25 left, and I'm pretty sure Cincinnati had all three timeouts left.
They had two timeouts. Yeah.
So there was still time for a little bit of Joe Burrow magic.
And it started off, I guess, that it was Joe Burrow magic for a little bit. You know, that first and 10, I think, and then there was called back. I think it was a delay game. I can't remember, but it was called back for some reason. This is on their final downs. I think it was first and 10 on 20. No, sorry. They got it. LA did a penalty. It was first and 10 on the 25 and Chase threw the ball. Burrow threw the ball to Chase for 17 yards, which made it first and 10 again. Sorry, my bad. And then Boyd got the ball for 9 yards. But after that second and one, it was... He had to use the timeouts, but it ended up sort of being sort of no huddle, and then it looked like he was too rushed, I guess.
It was back to back plays by Aaron Donald that essentially ended that game.
Yeah. Well, it was. I mean, he literally pulled Sam Perrien back. Like, literally, you could see, you can watch replays. He pulled him back so much.
Oh, yeah, no, he smashed him. I think LA, too, they were really lucky as well. Like, you know, like we said, that Jalen Ramsey had, I think, a fairly mediocre game.
Oh, yeah.
The catch by Jamar Chase down the left, which went for 20 odd yards, I think that he stepped in for the interception, which is just dumb. Just cover the man.
Yeah.
Tackle him as soon as he catches the ball. Like, you don't need to be going for the highlight reel play. Like, just play smart defense. Don't be a dick and trying to overshadow everybody. Like, just play smart defense. And he did get burnt by Jamar Chase, but he's lucky that their drive stalled in trying to get it just to that. He had to get into field goal range, and McPherson's, I think, career long was like 58. So they only had to get to about the 42 yard line or something like that. So they were well on their way. I think it was the second play of the drive after the Rams scored the go ahead touchdown. And Jamar Chase sort of, gets on the outside of Jalen Ramsey. It's like, what in the hell are you doing?
Yeah. He was lucky he had some coverage behind him. Otherwise,
they were very lucky, because if Jamar Chase gets away, see you later. Nobody's catching him in that backfield.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. No one was catching him in this backfield. So they're extremely lucky. But you're right. It was Aaron Donald, those last two plays, pulling Perrien back, and then obviously, you know, mauling or coming, you know, coming for Burrow, and then making him throw
Joe
that ball
Burrow had have had, say, one more second or two more seconds before Aaron Donald got there, and I know that's time that sometimes you just can't afford when, you know, you've got one of the best defensive tackles that anybody has ever seen in this game, and you've seen him shirtless throughout the... throughout the celebration. Good God. Holy mackerel. He is just a man made of granite. But if Burrow had looked up, if he had been afforded one more second, and if he looks up to the right, Jamar Chase is wide open.
Yeah, that's exactly
was not afforded to him because Aaron Donald got there too quick.
Yeah, yeah. And the quickness that he got to him was absolutely ridiculous. No one was stopping him. And he knew he needed to do that play. Because otherwise, if they got that one sort of playoff, for McPherson would have been a field goal and we would have been going to another overtime game. It ended up being a great game, 23-20. We always usually do studs and duds of the week. I don't know about you, but I mean, he's the easy stud, Cooper Kupp, just what he sort of did in that game. And even that sort of two touchdown effort, plus that second one after then, you know, getting a, it wasn't even a pass interference. What was it? It was sort of.
He got rattled. I think it ended up being a pass interference call? He got rattled as a defenseless receiver. He got hit pretty hard, but then it was offsetting penalties, I think, because there was a holding call.
There was a holding call
before
I think it was
that,
like
so they were offsetting penalties, so they had to replay it down.
Yeah, they did. And then he got that, and he still. This is what I couldn't work out. Like
It was just like a back shoulder fade pass that Eli Apple got burnt on.
He had one person on him.
Eli Apple got burnt on the field and off the field.
Oh yeah, that's a whole nother subplot for this.
Oh my god, he got torched on Twitter.
But it's in Eli Apple's defense. Why is he the only one that was on Cooper Kupp when you know the ball was going to Cooper Kupp?
Oh, absolutely.
That play? I cannot work.
Absolutely.
They were double teaming for a little bit. Why not triple team him?
You got to at least double coverage. I think that's one of the glaring things that sort of come out, especially with the receiver stocks that the Rams had towards the end of this game. And again, hindsight's 20/20. Why wasn't Cooper Kupp? You make anybody on that team beat you other than Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But he did. He did. He was open. He got them down. Deserved him, to me, the MVP. I mean, it wasn't just deserved. He did everything that he needed to do.
It's a culmination of the season that he's had.
That's
You know, the involvement that he had in the final drive that got the go-ahead touchdown. I think that all sort of, that also
It was everything. Brilliant season, you know. It was.
Well, he's the eighth. He's the eighth wide receiver to get, Super Bowl MVP.
Do you remember the last one?
Edelman.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, no, I was thinking. You're right. Actually, I'm thinking the best one who they keep comparing this guy to, and I only can't because of the less games. But Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice to me is in a world of his own. Jerry Rice.
He is the top of the food chain, and everybody else is just clawing to get up that pyramid.
Well, the only other one that's very close behind him to me is Calvin Johnson, and I still think Cooper Kupp's third, and that's just my personal opinion. Calvin Johnson.
I mean, Cooper Kupp is still
a long
way to go to get to there. He's had an amazing season, and anything can happen in this league, because just 2 years ago, Michael Thomas set a receptions record and had one of the best receiving seasons in NFL history. And now look where he is at the moment. So anything can happen in this league. So he's got great projections at the moment. And we'll have to see whether or not he can continue on this run.
He's only 27 too. So that's
no, that's right. He's got loads of time left.
So a couple of subplots sort of from this game that I guess are thrown out there or keep coming out there. Obviously the Super Bowl, you know, champions, LA Rams, like you said, you mentioned during a few times during this that they had to go all in. Well, they didn't have to go all in, but they went all in.
They went all in, mortgage the future.
One of those big moves was for Matt Stafford, who couldn't win a Detroit Lions playoff game when he was at Detroit Lions, but wins the Super Bowl in his first year at LA Rams. Is he because it keeps coming out there. Is he yellow jacket worthy? Is he Hall of Fame worthy now?
What is he, 30? Is he 32?
32, turning 33.
So he's right. he's got a lot of time to, like, I don't think anybody would question his greatness. Like, he carried that Detroit Lions team. He was let down, I guess, by the organization multiple times. Like, I think, what did he play? Did he play in 3 playoff games, I think, in 12 seasons there? Detroit hasn't won a playoff game in like 53 years. So they're a perpetual losing franchise, which is, yeah, mm-hmm. which is sad to say, because, you know, the Detroit Lions fans, they show up. It's not as if it's being, you know, shown in crowd numbers or anything like that. Ford Field fills up every single week for the Detroit Lions.
Correct.
He had, like you said, he had one of the greatest receivers in the history of this game and could not get over the hump.
No, that's right.
This franchise, it's killed three of their greats' careers. Like, Barry Sanders quit on the team. Well, yeah, quit because he couldn't take the beatings anymore. He was sick of what was happening there. Calvin Johnson did exactly the same. Like, at least Matt Stafford got out of there.
Exactly.
While he could, and while he can still pave a path, to creating a really good legacy. And the thing that I see that's out there a lot is he's got as many Super Bowls as Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees.
Wow.
And they're considered to be two of the greats.
Of course. And then obviously the recently retired Tom Brady, but he's probably a surefire Hall of Famer. But the reason I bring it up is, have a guess, you know, the Hall of Fame. Have a guess how many quarterbacks are in the Hall of Fame. It's not what you think. It's probably the clue I can give to you. It's not what you think.
You'd think there would be quite a lot, but I...
you would think there would be quite a lot.
I think because we're in an era now, especially probably in the last 25 years or even the last 20 years, where quarterback is super important and statistics have been so unbelievably inflated that this next crop, you say in the next 10 years or so, will be very quarterback heavy, just purely on the reason why the league is having so much success at the moment with, you know, the offensive, you know, explosion that's been happening over the last few years. Because you look at guys like, I think, you know, there's sort of two examples that stick out a lot is, you know, Terry Bradshaw, what did he win? 4 Super Bowls with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and, you know, his statistics don't jump off the page at all, but he's a 4-time Super Bowl winner. Troy Aikman was you know, he had Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith. And his number statistically, guys that have been in the league 5 or 6 years are already say 6 or 7 years are already overtaking Troy Aikman statistically.
That's right. So
it wasn't as important as it's not so much more the wins, but it's a different beast now, the way that the NFL has played.
Well, that's exactly right. But, you know, like you just mentioned sort of certain positions, certain Super Bowls. So the number, it's been going since 1963, and the number of quarterbacks that are only in there is 27 total. That's it. Which to me, I'd say it's just an interesting, since it's, you know, I'm not saying the Hall of Fame's been going since 63, but they, you know, the modern era wise, they've been 56 years to choose from, so to speak. So it's interesting you mentioned a couple of players, like you just said, with, you know, your certain ones. Like, it's just a weird way how it's voted at the end of the day. Like, to me, because of his statistics and because of his 2 Super Bowls, why can't someone like Eli Manning make it? And I'm not being that, because I'm not the biggest fan of Eli Manning, but statistically, he should make it. Statistically,
he should make it, but I don't think anybody is you know, going out there and say that he was actually, you know, he was an upper echelon quarterback throughout his whole career. Like he had great defenses. The 2 years that they won the Super Bowl, that they knocked off the Patriots both times. They were real defensive sort of heavy schemes, and you know, they had guys like Michael Strahan and you know, Eli Manning, but you don't think of Eli Manning as what you would with Peyton Manning.
And this is where it's a weird sort of...
So, like you said, statistically, though, if you played blind quarterback statistics, and I've seen this on the Colin Cowherd show on Fox Radio, that he was doing this with... who was he doing this with? I think it was... I can't remember if it was Joe Burrow or... Oh, actually, it might have been with Matthew Stafford, that he was doing like blind quarterback with... To, you know, going just saying quarterback rating, how many interceptions, blah 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 this year, and it was really interesting to sort of to watch that clip. But I think when you look at Eli Manning, like that crop from what draft was that? That 2004 mm-hmm. or 2003? That draft that
crop was ridiculous.
Yeah, Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning.
Arguably,
you know, one of the best crops of quarterbacks to come out of a single draft in NFL history, and that they're all.
Was in that mix too. Don't forget, remember, because he was sitting in. Aaron Rodgers was in that mix too, wasn't he? Because he was sitting in that green room for a while. I'm pretty sure he was in that same mix, wasn't he?
I don't know if he goes back.
Was he in that mix? I'm sure he was.
I think he might have been a bit after that.
But you're right. It's. I mean, we were going away from what we talked about Stafford. I think Stafford has a case.
Has a case now that he's got a ring.
Yeah. It's just weird how they
but
sort of
not having statistics. Not getting Super Bowl MVP could be a detractor.
It's possible. It could be a detractor. It's weird. I just love how all the Super Bowls, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, all the Hall of Fames, Rock and Roll. Pro football, all of them are in Ohio. I find that weird. I don't know why. I just find
that. That's a little strange.
Baseball's in there as well. Another
2005
subplot.
Aaron Rodgers draft.
Another subplot for you. Odell Beckham Jr. This might be a quick one, but he obviously went down injured. We don't know how bad the extent of the injury is.
Even as of now, like, you know, we're quite a few days removed from the Super Correct. Bowl, but I haven't heard confirmation of torn ACL, but that seems to be the consensus diagnosis of what's happened to OBJ.
Regardless, because his ACL's galore for some reason this year, he gets a bigger contract. He stays there. What are your sort of thoughts?
He stays, but I don't know. I think that with this injury, I don't think he gets a gigantic contract.
Maybe signs a one. Because Robert Woods is coming back, and Robert Woods has a big contract. And Robert Woods, everything, like, even you can see all the post stuff. Like, everybody loves Robert Woods in that team. Everybody.
No, that's right. And see, also, too, I think as well, like, they've got fairly good depth there at running back as well. So I think three will squeeze into two as well, like with Cam Akers, Daryl Henderson, and Sony Michel. I think Sony Michel is a free agent coming
this year.
So I think he could be the odd one out there.
He has to be, because the other dudes are 23, 24 respectively. So he has to be the odd one out purely because they're still on rookie contracts. This one, I think it's pretty straightforward, but Andrew Whitworth, I think he retires now, doesn't he? He got what he needed to. Literally, probably. And they say Aaron Donald, but I think Whitworth's the heart and soul of that team.
Whitworth. We got the Walter Payton.
Easily the heart and soul of that team.
I think that there's a very distinct possibility. That's, I mean, all the hoopla and all the talk has been about, about Aaron Donald and what he sort of come out and said, you know, this, you know, the week leading up to the Super Bowl, that this could be it for him. But, yeah, I definitely think that Whitworth has got more of a chance of retiring than what Aaron Donald does, because
there's
no chance in hell that Aaron Donald retires.
A 41-year-old left tackle who's been phenomenal, protected Stafford.
Insane.
Massively.
At that position.
Yep.
That's just that's unbelievable.
He's been a stalwart for the team. Like you see all these weird Instagram, you know, post NFL. I guess because there's 9 million cameras in Hollywood. He had Higby and Woods literally handwritten on his under t-shirt underneath, and just went up to him and just said, "I did this for you guys. You know, Tyler and Robert Woods." So yeah, retires heart and soul of that team. I know. Well, we talk about Aaron Donald. I think the same thing. I know he's 30, and I know he's been in the.
He ain't going nowhere.
He's been in there for now 10 years if he plays next year, but I think, yeah.
He's not going nowhere.
I think he's going nowhere. I think he does another year. And that's the same as I think, I don't know why this one gets put out there, but I think Sean McVay, the head coach, I don't know why that's out there, but he does it. He's re-signing.
He's not going. I've heard all this garbage about that's him going ridiculous. Going into the booth, going into the media. Give me a break. What is he, 38?
He's 36.
36. But do you know what I mean? Like that's crazy talk. Like it's all about he sort of come out and said, you know, work life balance, and you know, he's just got married.
No, he's getting married in the off season.
He's getting married, so it's going to be whether or not, you know, he wants to, you know, I guess sort of, you know, settle down and maybe pump out a couple of kids with the wife and then maybe get back into coaching, but he is not going to be any more hotter than what he is right now.
No, I don't think he's moving. I think he loves LA, so I think he stays where he is personally as well. The last two subplots for me was the two teams going forward. I mean, let's start with the easy one, the Rams going next year. I think that, you know, they're all drunk and everything like that, but they all want to bring the same people back. But realistically, is that going to happen? Well, they were smashed.
In a hard salary cap sport, very difficult to do. So there's going to have to be sacrifices being made by people that want to stay there. Whether it's your high profile guys, you know, like what? Ramsey, like OBJ, like Stafford, like Eric Donald.
Eric Waddle, like Von Miller.
Eric Waddle looks like he might go back into retirement. He only come out of retirement like 6 weeks ago, so he might go back into retirement. Leonard Floyd.
Von Miller's a huge one.
Von Miller. Like there's a lot of guys there's going to be a lot of money sort of tied up in, and it's going to be along the lines of. Do they all just go? Let's just stay the course. You know, there's going to be some guys there that go, hey, you know, like guys that, you know, aren't high profile guys that be like, hey, I want to get paid.
They
like,
have to do. If the team the team's gonna have to do a Golden State Warriors thing where they're just gonna have to sacrifice some sort of money if they want to run it back. And I don't think it's going to happen, but I think they're going to have some casualties. It just depends on how big are the casualties. That's going to come down to. So
no, that's right. It's if they bring, I guess, you know, the core guys. But look, it's hard. You know, I've heard the argument out there. Can they repeat? Nobody's repeated since the Patriots in 2003 and 2004.
Yeah.
So no, it's been nearly 20 years since we've had a repeat champion, and that's the dynasty of all dynasties as of late. Like even they could only put together back-to-back Super Bowl wins, and that was nearly 20 years ago. So I think the NFC at the moment it's top heavy. The bottom is not very good of the NFC, but the top teams of the NFC are very good. Whether or not they can, you know, that they can run the gauntlet again.
On the other side, but the AFC is just littered with good teams.
Right. The AFC especially is a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And it come down to, you know, the Bengals riding a bit of luck. A couple of teams, you know, especially with them beating Tennessee, like that they choked that game away. The Kansas City Chiefs choked that second half away against the Bengals in the AFC Championship game. You know, I don't think a lot has been too much has been said about that it's essentially like that they had the Bengals on the ropes, and they should have done an Atlanta against the Patriots in the Super Bowl a few years ago. They've got just control time of possession, yeah. Just run the ball, and yeah. They didn't.
No, they didn't. No, you're right, they didn't. So by the sounds of what you're saying, because I think you're starting to say the same as me, you don't see them. They've got a great team, but you don't see them running it back to where they were again this year, the Bengals.
I don't think so. I think that's, I mean, I think this,
I love
this
their
was,
team. I love
no,
their
exactly.
team.
No, exactly. And I'm not saying that they can't get back there, but I'm saying that's the AFC gauntlet that you've got to go through has got some pretty high powered teams in there, and
they still got to try to win.
It's going
to
be very difficult. They've got a very tough division that they play in.
That's right.
And that's essentially what it comes down to is beating those divisional rivals.
That's exactly right. They still got to forget about the actual AFC as a whole. The AFC North has got the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Browns. They're not three teams to sneeze at. That's a really tough division.
That's right. So, that division could be could,
well, look what happened this year.
A bloodbath again next year.
This year was the same thing. It was so the Steelers squeaked in because of a draw. So it was, yeah, you're right. It could be a bloodbath. That's a good way to put it.
There's a couple. Yeah, the AFC West is going to be a bloodbath the next couple of years as well.
And even if you look, even the Rams, like. That I know they won the division, but that's still a strong division.
That's a tough division as well.
The Seahawks I think they'll bounce back next year, but you still got the Arizona Cardinals, who did fairly well, and then you've got the 49ers. So yeah, that's a tough division as well to me.
Yeah, that's right.
So just to finish on to finish on the NFL coaches that have been hired for now, the rest of the coaches have at least.
Yeah, well, the last job was filled the other day, and that's basically only because Kevin O'Connell was on the LA Rams staff, so they had to wait until the end of the season before they could do sort of any formal hiring of him. But the Minnesota Vikings have hired him mm-hmm. As their head coach. Houston, sort of danced around a little bit, and they've now hired Lovie Smith.
Yeah.
They just elevated. Nice. He was defensive coordinator, so they just elevated him.
Yeah.
The same sort of situation in New Orleans, which I said on our last pod, I really hope that Dennis Allen got the job, and he did. So yeah. Dennis Allen is now the head coach of the Saints, which I think was probably the absolute best situation that they could be put in. Yeah. They've also hired Doug Marrone to be part of the offensive staff there. And I think that Pete Carmichael, who has been elevated now to offensive coordinator at the Saints, so that'll be really interesting. Jim Harbaugh has been left jobless and scurried back to Michigan. So,
correct.
No Jim Harbaugh back in the NFL, and Doug Peterson being hired at Jacksonville. So he's been given the job there to try and unlock, I guess, Trevor Lawrence. And the one that sort of made, I think, probably the biggest noise was Mike McDaniel.
Yeah.
The offensive coordinator at San Francisco being hired at the Dolphins.
I wonder why.
Their organization is in a little bit of disarray, I guess, at the moment.
The reason I say I wonder why, because he's biracial, so black and white parents basically.
Yeah, that's right.
But of everything I've read of him, and he's an interesting sort of character. He's only 38, so he's just this young cop's coming through big time. Shanahan, that's the one I'm trying to think. Just absolutely, he thinks he is so built for being a head coach. This Mike McDaniel, it's uncanny that
he's got one job, isn't he?
And that's
to get the best out of Tua.
That's literally it was on their private jet, but it's the first person he called. It was obviously camera. you know, camera jargon and all the camera. Let's do it for all the cameras. But the first person he FaceTimed was Tua and just said, like, my job literally is to get the best out of you.
Yep, so. Absolutely. And they should be doing exactly what two other AFC teams should be doing this offseason in the Steelers and the Bengals. Also, the Miami Dolphins should just use every single draft pick on offensive linemen.
Well, and if he follows the motto, like you meant getting the best out of your quarterback, if he follows the motto of what Shanahan does at the 49ers, he's supposed to be a really good coach, just McDaniel. Supposed to be a really good coach. So
the Dolphins too, I think they also need to find or get stability in the run game.
No,
that seems to be a real sort of stalwart in
Gaskins
in his schemes, and also Shanahan schemes is a really good run game and really creative. So whether or not the likes of Miles Gaskin and Duke Johnson can do the job for the Dolphins, or whether they have to dig into the draft
in somewhere,
or try and pick something up in free agency. But yeah, I think they need to I think they need to get a bit more stability in their run game, and then just use every single other draft pick on an offensive lineman and try and hit on a good one, because that's the most important thing there is to protect Tua. Give Tua time, because you know, it was the likes of him and Joe Burrow that were and Big Ben that were under the most duress this season, simply because they could not protect as well as what, you know, they couldn't protect competently, and their quarterback had to get the ball out so quick that you simply negate the long ball. And I think the Dolphins have got two really good threats in the long game in Jalen Waddle and Devontae Parker.
And that's and he found Jalen Waddle so much this year. So I think
as the season went on, not so much the start of the season, but as the season went on,
so if you find
they started to get connect a little bit better and sort of get that deep threat down pack, because there was games there that Waddle was getting 10, 12 receptions and having like 50 yards.
Yeah. Then 49ers knew he was going. They already hired a day before he got announced, Anthony Lynn, to the offensive coordinator.
That's right.
Former LA Chargers coach.
Yeah, Chargers head coach. Yeah, that's right.
So, that's, I guess, successfully fills all the head coaches for this season. So it'll be interesting. A lot of young coaches, a lot of new faces, a lot of this offseason is going to be wild for a lot of reasons. Obviously, the head coaches, the free agent, the draft. But to me, the biggest thing of, and I think it's clearly obvious, is what quarterback's going to be where. There's technically 12 positions up for grabs.
No, that's right. I think two of the ones that I've sort of been hearing as of lately, or, you know, as of late, is, you know, one that's probably not going anywhere, and that's Derek Carr.
He looks like
he's in line for an extension and could get anywhere up to like $40 million.
I did read that.
That's huge. And look, you know, you look at his touchdown interception numbers weren't terrific. You know, 23 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, but completed 68% of his passes and threw for 4,800 yards.
Correct. That's
not awful.
And he's just turned 30. He's got
plenty left in the tank.
And he's got a high-powered, offensive-minded head coach now. Josh McDaniel. So, who has already, you know, he said, oh, no, Derek Carr's definitely in my plans. So, I the $40 million did throw me. I'm not going to lie, a little bit. I think.
Yeah, I thought that was.
I think they'll push him back. He'll probably get 30 to 35. I think, because that's the market.
I still even think that's too much.
Yeah, but this is where the market is now. If he can command it, being that he's only 30 years old, and like you just mentioned, just throws under 5,000 yards and got his team. You know, I think if he was close to the main reason, probably a little bit of the defensive, like Max Crosby and that, but he was one of their main reasons they got to that wild card, to where they were. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's – yeah, no, I did see that. I thought – well, that – I mean, the two quarterbacks everywhere, that – and then the biggest thing was that – well, at least for me, was Kyler Murray's effective scrubbing of Arizona Cardinals off his social medias.
Yeah, that was a bit of an odd one. Like, there's lots of rumors that are coming out about that, whether or not, you know, how much you want to sort of buy into them and whether or not they're true. He sort of thinks he's being framed as a scapegoat for, you know, the reason that they sort of were a bit lackluster towards the end of the season. But I don't think that's entirely his fault, because once DeAndre Hopkins went down, the Arizona Cardinals went down, and I don't think that's got a whole lot to do with Kyler Murray. I know he's the quarterback, and he's going to be the guy that takes a lot of the heat for it. But yeah, they were very underwhelming once DeAndre Hopkins went down, because I think they started this. What did they start the season? 7-0, 8-0, and then once D-Hop went down,
bit, you're right. Apparently, they fell off the face of his planet. It's not so much the question of how he is in the game, but it's his question of leadership and his I guess willingness to win kind of thing is what they're talking about.
I think it's a little bit of his demeanor as well. Apparently he's, you know, behind the scenes he's sort of, yeah, he's acting a little bit petulant and yeah, do you know what I mean? Like I said, he's apparently a bit of a finger pointer, you know, trying to blame everybody else except himself. So these are the sort of, yeah, stories that are coming out from behind the scenes. But you know, he put a statement out there on Twitter, you know, basically trying to squash all of those rumors about himself and trying to put some facts out there. So I think the person that's probably under the most pressure there at Arizona is not Kyler Murray, and that's Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, you know,
he's the guy that's under pressure, because he was the one that was brought out of the college game that nobody saw coming. Like Texas Tech head coach, and yeah, he wasn't anything special there. I think it was like two games under 500 as the Texas Tech coach, and all of a sudden he's being considered as this offensive genius and this air raid offense genius. Yeah. And it hasn't resulted in a playoff.
Because you know, because one of his great mates is one Sean McVay.
That's right. Yes, is Robin the Boy Wonder.
Him, it's a weird, even though they're all, it's so weird they all play in the same division, but him, Kyle Shanahan and Cliff Kingsbury are all really, really good mates, which is so weird, and they all play in the same division. I am totally with you. I think it's more on Cliff Kingsbury. I digged a little bit deeper. There's no chance Kyler Murray gets traded, because that has never happened. A rookie quarterback, because he's still in his rookie contract. A rookie contract.
I think one more year before he can be extended.
The rookie QB has never been traded to another team in the Super Bowl era. Ever. Ever.
It won't happen.
So it won't happen, of course. He's too valuable. He is valuable. So he probably needs to change his mindset, possibly. That's my feeling, even though he says he's all about the team and everything, post all this stuff that's coming out. But I think he needs to change his mindset a little.
I just think it's a little bit of recency bias that they had such a poor ending to the season, mm-hmm, that everybody has forgotten how good they actually were at the start of the season.
We both said during the season, and you just mentioned it before, if D-Hop was there healthy for the entire year, the Rams wouldn't even be where they were.
No, that's right.
As personally, that's what I thought.
Look, they've done a Parramatta, exactly, Eels for the last couple of years. They peaked way too early. Well, they peaked way too early in the season, and that's what they've been known for the last few years. And then, right, and then once the end of the season comes around, they're just a big pile of garbage.
No, that's true. No, that's definitely true.
Well, they were awful towards the end of the season.
They were awesome. So. Everybody again said Kyler Murray MVP, like we did the year before.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he was on fire, literally on fire. Any other news to sort of finish up before we wrap this NFL pod up?
The other quarterback. Look, you know, we're hearing Jimmy G and whether or not he's been getting talk about trade partners. We won't go into that too much. Like, he may have played his last game possibly as a San Francisco 49er, but I think that would be absolutely to their detriment to elevate Trey Lance as a starter. It just doesn't look like he's got the goods just of yet. So, but Jimmy G's almost resulted to the fact that he's could be on the move. So whether or not teams will be interested in trading for him. But another one that I've heard that's making the rounds at the moment is Carson Wentz. And there's a special date in mind that's coming up when it regards to Carson Wentz, and that's the 19th of March. When the rest of his contract, so $15 million, becomes fully guaranteed.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So there's the possibility that he could get traded or even cut, which seems insane to me, what they gave up to Philadelphia to get him to have 1 year and for them to dig themselves out of the hole that they were in at 2-5 to start the year, had the toughest opening schedule in the first 6 to 7 weeks of that season, to dig themselves all the way out and be one game away from making the playoffs and I think really making some noise, and then shitting the bed against Jacksonville.
I agree.
That he could be cut is crazy.
For what they gave up, no, I totally agree with you. But I mean, on the flip side, we said about like certain teams that are win now. They are tailor made. Probably need another wide receiver, but they are.
Oh, they absolutely need to start getting wide receivers like Pittman. Pittman, yeah, if you put him on certain other teams, he's not a number one. Like, he was pretty good this year and a really good deep threat. But T.Y. Hilton, coming towards, was he 30, 31?
He's coming
towards the end of it. He was really inconsistent.
Zach Pascal was nothing. Yeah, no, you're right.
Their receiving core was pretty ordinary. So they relied very heavily on the likes of Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines and guys like that. But he only threw 7 interceptions this year. And he didn't throw one on the road until he went to Jacksonville.
But this is unfortunately, I agree.
Which is insane to hear. He threw 27 touchdowns this year, which is not great, but still more than what Derek Carr threw. Yeah, he had 3,500 plus yards and a 62% completion rate with a pretty poor receiving core there. I just don't understand that. Like, I think that's a really good bounce back year for him compared to what he was trending like his last 2 years in Philadelphia.
I agree. I thought he had an okay season. Unfortunately, it's a scapegoat.
Look, he fell flat towards the end of the season. He threw 10 TDs in his last 8 games.
Yeah, and he was running for his life as well. But that's the scapegoat of the QB. That's just the way it is. I know what you're saying is crazy, but I actually think that's what will happen.
Where are you going to find anything that's either tradable or on the free agent market that's going to be a significant upgrade to Carson Wentz? Well, I don't know where you find that.
Well, you find Russell Wilson is what you find.
You're going to have to throw the farm at Seattle to be able to pry Russell Wilson away. You're going to have to throw more than the farm at Green Bay to be able to pry Aaron Rodgers away.
It's not happening. Rodgers ain't going to Indy. That I know is definitely not happening. But I don't mean there's plenty. I don't think the
significant upgrades. That's what I want to know. Like, where you can go?
Where
yep,
are they?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this is going to be better.
No, that's true. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know.
I think this is a really good bounce back year for Carson Wentz, and it's just once again, it's a little bit of recency bias.
Recency bias.
And whether or not the thing that's got to do with his 10 touchdown passes in 8 games towards the end of the year is because Jonathan Taylor was the one scoring all the freaking touchdowns for the Colts.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back and find out how many running touchdowns they had in that 8 game space where Wentz only threw 10 TDs.
I thought, as far as I was aware, Frank Reich liked him. That was the whole reason that
exactly.
he went there.
Well, that doesn't matter whether the coach likes him. It's the GM and the owner that makes these decisions.
Well, I suppose, like you said, that D-Day, if that D-Day comes up and it passes, then he's definitely staying there for that year at least.
That's right. Once we get past March 19, and he's still on the roster, that means, yeah, the rest of his contract's guaranteed, 15 mil in the bank, he not going anywhere.
No, that's
It was just crazy for me to hear that.
Yeah.
It's not so much the traded part of it, but for them to just totally cut ties and get absolutely nothing for him is crazy.
It's possible. It's I wouldn't say it's crazy. I think it's
because they don't even have Jacob Eason as their back. I can't even remember who the backup quarterback is there at Indy at the moment.
No, I can't remember either. No, you're right. This is the way it is. It's probably. So they'd have to pay $15 million more. But if they're not going to get a trade partner, and no one's going to be silly to offer something high when they know once that deadline passes, they're going to have to keep him anyway. So, because, you know, teams aren't that dumb. So I think they have to – they probably have to cut him if they don't want to keep him. If they don't want to keep him.
Sam Ellinger.
No one's going
to – there's your backup.
No one's going to give him a first and maybe a second, but that's probably it. Because of the deadline, yeah. Because they're not stupid. They're going to know, well, I'm not going to give you anything when I know once that passes, you're going to be stuck with him anyway.
Look, it's to me, it's about that. It's about the receiving core.
If he gets cut, that's crazy. Yeah, if he gets cut, that's absolutely
It's about
bad.
The receiving core. No, like, you know, yeah, Zach Pascal, like, yeah, the Paris Campbell, T.Y. Hilton, like, you know, Jack Doyle. Like,
Paris Campbell.
Jack Doyle
is
on the way out. You know, they
Michael
got,
Pittman and that's it.
Exactly. They need to go into the free market
agency.
Or start drafting some wide receivers because that then they don't have to rely on Jonathan Taylor as much.
Yeah, that's right. No, you're exactly right. Well, that is it for our NFL pod. Don't forget our socials, as always, Facebook, which is Final Play Podcast, and Twitter, Final Play Podcast. Facebook's where you'll get all the links for Spotify, for SoundCloud, etc. As always, we give our shout out to gimco.com.au or Eureka Sports Cards.
Yep, went in the Super Bowl break. That was a massive, massive Super Bowl break that happened there. Ended up getting the Tampa Bay Bucks, so that was quite good. So always a massive shout out and a big thanks to Dom and Mojo King and Chris Raines, those guys like that keep gimco.com.au and Eureka Sports Cards afloat. They always do a really good job now. And I guess now that the NFL's over, those breaks for the NFL will be very few and far between throughout the off season, which will be a little bit disappointing because I really love going in. I love going into the NFL breaks, but looks like I'll just have to start getting into the NBA breaks a little bit more. So, but there's always plenty of action going on as it pertains to breaks on gimco.com.au. The NRL starting up, so they'll be doing a few more of those sorts of breaks and stuff as well. And the NBA just carries on. So, still. Always as popular as ever.
Were you happy with your Super Bowl break?
No, I wasn't. You know, I got Tampa, so, you know, I wasn't terribly, terribly unimpressed with getting that. So, yeah, just waiting for those cards to rock up in the mail. So, yeah, but yeah, nice. pretty happy with, pretty
yeah,
happy
Tampa's
with getting
a good
that
one,
and, yeah. and what I got. So,
yeah, Tampa's definitely a good one to get.
That's nice. Right. So, yeah, there's big possibilities with that. So, pretty happy with that. I went another Super Bowl break as well. So, but I ended up buying a team in the AT. So I ended up I bought the Saints. So as you do, but, I don't think I got, it was an immaculate case break. So it was high risk, high reward, and I'm pretty sure I didn't get anything in it. So, but anyway, that's the name of the game. Those guys were always happy and grateful for their support.
Well, that's it. My name's Jason. I'm already having an NFL Super Bowl hangover. What to do with NFL Smith? I've started watching Man in the Arena a bit more, like the last two episodes because they just popped up.
Did you watch the Tuck Rule? 30
yes.
for 30?
Oh my God.
Is that Tom Brady's house?
Yes.
Holy F.
Yes.
That's one of his.
That's one of his houses.
That is unbelievable. I couldn't when it first started off and he's standing there at the front on the beach and you know the little drone cameras panning in and everything. It's like, that's not his house, is it? That looks like three houses.
That's his house.
That's the most amazing house. Or
Giselle's house. Who knows? It's probably Giselle's. She owns.
That's
she
the
owns
most amazing way. House I've ever seen. I've seen. Yeah, you see some pretty crazy houses in LA, but that is the most insane house I've ever seen.
Yeah, he. They're both not short of money, but anyway.
Yeah, no.
That's why there's no point. There's no reason why he needs to play again. We didn't touch on that, but he doesn't need to play again for that reason alone. He doesn't need to.
I still think he made his decision very hastily, but it's.
If they start Lance, they will start Lance, is my gut feeling. And my gut this is my gut feeling. They'll start Lance. Jimmy G will go somewhere, most likely. I'm throwing out there Pittsburgh, but he'll go somewhere. And if Trey Lance doesn't work out for the first 6 or 7 weeks, that's a Tom Brady. I'm going to help you is try to and then win one more Super Bowl move.
Well, possibly.
Because of how much he obviously loves the 49ers. It was his favorite team. It is his favorite team as a kid. So, and his father's favorite team and everything. And that was all I seen was 49ers stuff. When you seen the man in the arena stuff of him wearing the hat and everything like that. So, that's my gut feeling happened. But he might just stay retired.
I reckon once you know June, July comes around, I reckon the feet are going to start getting a little bit itchy in that mansion in Tampa. I'd love to see
what happens with Gronk's feet, what he's going to do.
Gronk's feet are going to be firmly planted on the ground. If there ain't no Tom Brady there, there ain't no Rob Gronkowski. I think it's as simple as that.
He also tweeted out how much he likes seeing Joe Burrow play and his swagger too. Imagine him going there. Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow.
He goes, I love your swagger, Joe, because, you know, Joe Burrow's been wearing all the, like, you know, all the ice, so to speak, and everything like
that. He's not short of confidence, that boy.
No. And that's what Rob and Gronk likes. He loves that kind of thing. If he goes there a minimal, oh my God.
That would be crazy.
They could possibly run it back, but anyway.
That would be crazy.
That's my long-winded sign-off.
Oof. That's a long-winded sentence. Not quite as much as mine, but Miles, anyone who paid $72 for a Pro Bowl ticket needs their head red plum. The Vegas Raiders, like anybody associated with that Pro Bowl, should be ashamed of themselves charging that much money to go and watch that garbage.
Surely some of that money, and I'm sure not all of it, but you're right that. Garbage kind of money that they had to pay for it should be a lot of it should be going to charity because it was playing literally touch football. It was playing touch football.
They were playing at like 20% speed.
And just like.
It was pathetic.
As fun as it was watching him run and run and run, like the Mac Jones sort of getting through and sliding through and then just literally getting touched but kept running. That's when I turned it off after that. I
heard about the Mac Jones 70-yard run. I watched about the first half of the first quarter, and I'm like, if it's going to continue like this, I'm out.
That was pathetic. It was abominable. It was the highlight of the whole thing was the Diggs brothers going against each other. And I mean,
I
don't mean just Trayvon Diggs covering Stephon Diggs. I mean, then Stephon Diggs was on defense and Trayvon Diggs was a wide receiver. I mean, they were covering each other offense and defense and swapping it. Again, which shouldn't happen in a game, but that's what I'm saying. That's what happened in the game. Trayvon was playing wide receiver and Stephon was a cornerback. So Stephon was on fire.
That's a nice little subplot, and I'm a little disappointed that I probably didn't get to see that, but the 85% of the rubbish that I watched when I was watching it, it wasn't worth it.
I'm telling you what, Stephon was a great corner. There's no way that Trayvon was getting the ball.
Anyone could be a great corner when you're playing at 20% speed, please.
I'm not the biggest fan of Trayvon, even though he's a Cowboy, but that's a whole different conversation.
No, that was just that. Stadium would have been, I don't know, three quarters full.
Yeah. Yep. Because people hate the game. You can't even bet on the game, which puts that, you know, into perspective.
Of course you can't bet on that rubbish.
But that's what I'm saying. But that puts in perspective of the authenticity of it, really. For that reason, you can't bet on it. For that reason, there's no it can't be authentic. But anyway,
no, it's terrible. Like we sort of said before we come on here, yeah, at least they don't want to cost themselves their millions by, you know, putting on a hit or, you know, maybe making a bit of a mistake and you know, undercutting somebody or something like that. They don't want to cost each other their money. So it's, I guess, one of those unwritten rules where it's just like, cool, we're just going to play like this is, you know, like a walkthrough. Like J.J. Watt was tweeting about, and he's seen walkthroughs with more intensity than that. So
yeah,
I think that was quite funny. But you look at the NBA All-Star game, which is coming up, you know, over the weekend, and it's at least in previous incarnations of it, you play a little bit of defense. You know, over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, it's just been ridiculous where everybody just stands around, you know, like a stale bottle of piss and just watches everyone waltz through the key and dunk it. Like, yeah, that's not like if I had been to one of those All-Star games in the last 5 or 6 years, I would have been bored out of my brain because there's no competitiveness. No. And now, you know, since they've sort of changed the rules a little bit in the fourth quarter and, you know, it's the first team, you know, to 24, you know, how they've made it in honor of Kobe, you know, in that fourth quarter, you know, the charity stuff where, you know, each team's charity gets money for winning the quarter and stuff like that. I think it's gotten a little bit better. And I think that there's more incentive to actually play a little bit of defense. And I think that has come to fruition through one person, and that's Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Ultra competitive, and he's not going to let anybody get the better of him.
Yep. No, and that's how it should be.
No, that's right. Yeah, take a bit of pride in yourself. Like, you know, you don't get hurt playing defense. Anybody's going to get hurt, especially in the NBA. Like, you just have a look at what happened to AD recently, but you don't get hurt playing defense.
No, that's right. But the NFL need to work out something for if they're going to keep doing it to entice people to watch and go to the game for that reason, because the defensive base, you may as well not have the defensive players.
You may as well not even have them out there.
The punters and the kickers were even saying they were just, all they were doing was being water boys during the game. That's how terrible it was.
Yeah. No.
So, yeah.
All right.
Have a good week, everyone.
All right. See ya. NRL coming.